Howdy, howdy, howdy. Welcome to another episode of the Steakhouse Sports Podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Paul.
And we are both riding high after some big wins by our teams, plus the Lakers winning the bubble championship. And with both our teams hitting the bye, we wanted to take a moment to see where the league stands between the haves and the have-nots after about 5 weeks of the season. So, but before we get into that, Paul, what's up, my man? How you doing?
I'm doing great, Chris. Thank you so much. Congratulations to you on a big Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
Your Raiders came away with a huge, really, really excellent victory over your division rival Chiefs.
Yep. First win in, I think, the Patrick Mahomes era.
Yeah. Definitely an upset victory by all intents and purposes. And then also your favorite NBA team wins its 17th championship,
yeah,
the Lakers. That's
yeah.
pretty awesome.
It's funny. There's a...
Happened on the same day.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, before we get into the congrats to you, it is funny because... The Lakers have been not very relevant for, you know, almost like 10, almost basically the entire decade of the 2010s. Like basically 2010 was their last championship. They were in the playoffs, I think, 1 year later. And then I don't think they were in the playoffs again until this. And it's an entirely different team.
Yeah.
So just kind of, it's interesting to think about, like, you really do root for laundry more than anything else. And,
yeah,
you know, you just kind of like pay attention for a while. And unlike the NFL where you will pay attention to every week and, you know, every game is important and
every,
you know,
game means so much.
You,
yeah,
can really, with the NBA, you can really give up on a season pretty fast. And, you know, it was certainly a tumultuous season overall, but it was very exciting. I think the basketball, the play was quite good from all the teams, really. So it was and it was certainly exciting. It's funny, though. Just the last little thing I'll say about this, since this is a football podcast, is even when the Lakers were up by 30 on Sunday, I was telling you before the podcast that I was still convinced they were going to lose somehow. And anyway, when we get into the games, I'll share a little bit more about like my Chiefs Raiders experience. But congrats to you, the first time in team history the Seahawks are 5-0.
That's right. Yeah.
Congratulations.
First time in franchise history.
Got to be a great feeling.
Yeah. It's a blessing and a curse, I guess, is for first time ever that my favorite team has been 5-0 to start the season. You know, the Seahawks have had a lot of bad years
in
there, particularly early on in the franchise's lifetime. But the last decade plus has been great under Pete Carroll's leadership. This is his 11th season coaching the team. I feel like the Seahawks have had a couple 4-0 starts, maybe within his tenure. I can't quite remember, but never 5-0, and to top it off, they're going 5-0 heading into their bye week.
Yep.
So hopefully they'll get a couple more players coming back from injury after the bye week, and we'll be at even more full strength. Well, I guess they're kind of far from full strength injury wise right now, which is problematic on the defense. We'll probably talk about that later, but never hurts to get an extra week of rest, and going into that bye week 5-0 undefeated is like money in the bank.
Yeah, I mean, so, you had the injuries anyway. You might as well be 5-0 at least.
That's right. and give those injured players an extra week to recover.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
And get back. So,
yep.
Well, let's jump right in. So if you haven't had a chance yet to check out the app and you have a few minutes, you can go to steakhousesports.com. A steak can be spelled either like the meat or the bet. And click on the link of your preferred app store to download our app and see what it's all about. Let's move on to the first segment of the show, one of our favorite segments of the show every week, our time-honored tradition where we talk whiskey and wagers.
All right, Paul, thanks a lot. So the barrel wagers are basically our locks of the week. The wagers we're so convinced we're going to get right that we would wager everything we own, including the clothes off our back. And if we get it wrong, we're wearing nothing but a barrel. But before we get into our wagers, what comes in barrels, Paul?
Well, one of the things that comes in barrels, besides crude oil and probably a bunch of other stuff.
And whatever is that we're wearing, from, you know.
Something that tastes,
to work these days.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Something that tastes a little better than crude oil is whiskey. And this particular whiskey that we're drinking tonight tastes a lot better than crude oil, I must say. It's Crater Lake Straight American Rye Whiskey from Crater Lake Spirits. Sorry, I didn't want to get that wrong. This is an excellent American rye whiskey. It's distilled in Bend, Oregon. So just some brief distiller's notes here. Crater Lake Rye Whiskey hopes to revive the tradition of these small family brands that were lost during Prohibition. Crafted from 100% rye grain and pure Cascade Mountain water, the character of our rye is rich with deep toffee notes and a peppery spice that defines true American rye whiskey. I could not have said it anywhere close to as good as that myself. So with that, I'm going to pop the bottle and give it a little splash.
All right.
You've already got some in your
I did. I'm sorry. You had actually cracked the bottle already, but I thought you had poured yourself some. But
oh, wow, look at that. I just filled up my glass like half full.
Attaboy. Well, there's a big ice cube there. But if Paul's speech starts to slur as we go along, well, you'll know why. So
yeah.
Anyway, thank you, Paul, for treating me with the whiskey this week. Cheers.
Yeah, cheers.
Oh, ooh, that is good.
Yeah, excellent.
That's smooth. Nice.
It is peppery spice and toffee-like.
I would never say that about whiskey, personally. Is it good or not?
It's great. Yeah, it's very, very good.
And that's as far as my palate goes.
Is it good? Does it get me drunk?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes and yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little bit above that. Does it get me drunk?
The brown sugar bourbon that we had.
Yeah, that was.
Or what? Wasn't one of them? We didn't actually drink this one on the show, but there's like the peanut butter one.
Yeah. Have you seen that one?
Yeah.
Have you heard that? You've heard ads for that?
Yeah.
That
yeah.
one sounds so bizarre.
I've seen it in the store.
I mean, they're advertising like crazy. We got to see if we can, they'll sponsor us. I mean, why not? Right.
Yeah. Why not? Well, we're a couple of nuts.
Yeah.
Might as well drink some whiskey that tastes like peanut butter.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I will go first with my barrel wager. And unfortunately, this is another loss for me. I think I'm 1-4 on the season. So not good. But my pick was for the Falcons to cover the measly 1-point spread at home versus the Panthers. I really figured that the Falcons would come out on fire with their backs against the wall.
Yeah.
So they were 0-4 to this point heading into week 5 and probably knowing that a loss would drop them. Obviously would drop them to 0-5, but also likely cost their head coach his job in the process. He was firmly on the hot seat in Dan Quinn. They were also playing at home, as I mentioned, against a division foe in the Panthers. So even with a few fans in the stand for the first time in Atlanta this year in this weird COVID season. So, I figured that would give them even more motivation playing at home in front of fans for the first time. So really, Chris, they couldn't lose this one, right?
Right.
I mean, it's only a 1-point spread.
They just had to win.
How could they lose?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that the biggest issue was that they were I think I got hit by quite a few injuries coming out of the last game. And despite the logic, which I agreed with, I really thought that, the way that the Falcons recovered last year when their backs were against the wall, that essentially saved Dan Quinn's job. I thought that they would be able to do it again, but I guess they went to the well one too many times and didn't have anything left.
Yeah, for what it was worth, too, I was really down on the Panthers heading into this season.
Mm-hmm.
Prediction-wise, I think I only picked them to win maybe 3 games all season. And they had already won 2 games in a row heading into this game. Yeah. So I figured it was inevitable, right?
Yeah.
I was wrong. The Panthers pretty much dominated the game and won going away 23-16. Very next day, Dan Quinn and the general manager for the Falcons did get fired. So I guess they didn't care that much about keeping his job.
Yeah. 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 So, well, it's a little bit too bad. I like Dan Quinn. I still feel a little bit bad for the Falcons organization from that Super Bowl from a few years ago, but that's the way it goes sometimes.
Yeah, they just couldn't seem to overcome that, and they had 2 more losses out of their 5 so far this season that were where they allowed their opponent to come from behind.
Right.
The one that really stands out was a couple weeks ago against the Cowboys.
Yeah.
I think they were winning that game by 17 points or something like that in the second half, and relinquished the lead and ultimately ended up losing the game, which was very reminiscent of that Super Bowl loss to the Patriots a few years ago. So,
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Something's not right about that strategy.
Letting a team come back from, a big deficit. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I don't recommend it.
It's the way that they do it. And you've pointed this out several times, passing the ball late in the game when they're
so
sitting
weird.
On a lead and, not running the ball and, milking time off the clock.
Right, right.
That's been their undoing. So
yep.
Apparently that strategy hasn't, it hasn't made its way up into the coaching staff's mind as far as strategy goes.
So. Yeah, I guess not. Well, you know, I'll just repeat it here, although it didn't really play a role in this game, but it, I'm going to mention the Raiders as many times as I can, but in the Raider game, you know, it really was like what they needed to do with when the Falcons needed to sit on a lead, they did not run out the clock. They kept playing their offense. They didn't adjust based on the circumstances of the game. And, you know, if they'd won one of those or two of those games, if they're 2-3, Dan Quinn and the GM, I forget his name, both probably still have a job. So,
yep.
Anyway, agreed. Too bad. All right, we'll go on to my wager. This one, I will freely admit, I was very lucky to pull out. I picked the Steelers not only to win against the Eagles, but to cover the 7.5-point spread. I felt good about the Steelers, but I think if you had told me that they would give up 29 points to the Eagles, I never would have taken this bet. It was really, really lucky. Chase Claypool had four touchdowns. Rookie receiver had four touchdowns, including one with like 3 minutes left where he was matched up against a linebacker and Ben Roethlisberger found him for like a 45-yard touchdown. And that was basically the game. As I said, I didn't think much of the Eagles even after their win. Felt like they were relatively fortunate to play the 49ers when they did. And meanwhile, the Steelers had a week off, and I thought that they would be prepared. So overall, it kind of played out. You know, it was a much higher scoring affair than I was expecting. I was expecting the Steelers, it would be probably more like a 10-24 game instead of a 38-29. So anyway, yeah. But I'm happy that the win came through for me, and you know, it felt good to see that. So one trend, Paul, I'll give you a little hint. One trend I'm noticing is that if there's an early shift in the week toward one side, then that trend is actually held pretty well. So, and if you see it continue, or if you don't see the spread go back towards the underdog, that is a good indication that early movement is one you might want to follow.
So movement toward the favorite?
Yeah. So it started out as the Steelers were 6-point or 7-point favorites. And then it moved early in the week to 7.5 and it never moved back. So that's part of what influenced my prediction was, okay, that was an early move, probably from the sharp bettors early on. And then if you see it move, either continue towards the favorite or it stays where it is, that goes into my bucket of, okay, these are potential bucket or barrel wagers. So anyway, just something the line movement is on the site or in the app. So you can just click on the game and you can see the chart that shows the line movement. So just a little tip for you.
That's cool.
I'm going to share it even though it gives away my competitive advantage to you.
See, my barrel wagers are purely based on gut feel. Which is probably why I'm 1-4 so far this year. But actually, last year I did really well. So,
yeah. You know, you beat my butt last year in the barrel wager.
Yeah, I usually just go through the list of games, and there will be one or two that stands out to me where it's like, oh, I can't believe the spread is that high or that low or the over under or whatever. Last week I picked an over under. That doesn't happen very often, but. I don't know. Yeah, mine are much more gut feel based, and I think that can work out for people in a lot of cases. Like for me, mentally, it just doesn't work to follow spreads and really kind of understand what what the implications are of that.
Yeah.
But it's super interesting to hear that strategy from your perspective too, and that's one thing that's so cool about this whole experiment, I think, is like everybody, when you're just making a raw score prediction, for example, everybody has their own sort of like methodology or way of thinking about it. Most of the time for me, it's just like, I just try go with my gut on that too and just put down, you know, the first score that comes to my mind, and rarely do I go back and edit it.
That's the same for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, I think that's exactly right. Like, I like that idea that everybody's got their own algorithm that they kind of run the scores through. And sometimes you go back and especially on like Fridays when the line or the injuries come out, that's a good time. Probably you go back and double check your scores. But
yeah, there's some obvious stuff, you know, schedule changes, weather, injuries.
Yeah.
Of course, the number one thing probably.
Yep.
just like in fantasy football too.
Right.
You know, a lot of the same considerations there, of course. But yeah, that's what makes it fun.
Yep, I agree.
All right, well let's jump into the results, starting with our highlights and lowlights.
All right. Well, thanks, Paul. So last week, the crowd ate 5 bagels, went off their keto diet. And this week, they stayed off the keto diet and they had 5 more bagels. It was a delicious, delicious meal.
Carb loading.
Yeah. They got a marathon coming up or what? What's going on? Well, in any case, it was unfortunately a rough week for the crowd. We'll get into the record in a little bit. But yeah, 5 games in which the crowd missed the picking the winner, the spread, and the total. And we'll go into those now. So on Thursday, and it started off on a rough week, on a rough note, I should say, the week did. The Bucks were in Chicago. The Bears were 3.5-point home underdogs. The total was 44.5. And the Bears won outright 20-19, which meant that they won and obviously covered. And the game stayed under the 44.5. Our crowd had the Bucks winning relatively easily, 26-22, which meant that they would win and cover, and the game would go just over that 44.5. So yeah, unfortunately, people had a lot more faith in Tom Brady than, and he did not come through for us. So
yeah, very true. Next game was the Bills and Tennessee Titans, which was actually just played tonight. This was one of the games that
it was originally scheduled for Sunday morning. So that's why it's high up in the schedule.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're recording this on a Tuesday night, and, that game actually just wrapped a couple hours ago. So, the Bills were in Tennessee, where the Titans were actually 3-point home underdogs, coming off of all the drama resulting from a bunch of positive COVID tests in their organization. So they were actually off last week. The total in the game was 53. The Titans won big, 42-16. I think we can agree this score was probably a little bit more lopsided than the game actually was, maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
I think Tennessee scored a couple of late touchdowns there.
That's right.
But, so the Titans easily cover, and the total goes well over the 53. The crowd thought that the Bills would win and cover, roughly winning about 20, well, we'll call it 25-21. So, yeah, the crowd thought the Bills would win and cover, and the total would go under 53 by quite a bit. So the crowd was way off on this one.
Yeah, I think people were just buying the Bills, and not that they were selling the Titans. I think maybe they were selling the Titans simply because of all the COVID drama.
Yeah, maybe there was thought they could be a little rusty. There could have been a lot of off-field drama distracting away from it. But we should mention Derrick Henry had one of the most awesome stiff arms in this game.
it will be impossible to miss. It's going to be everywhere.
It's been all over social media ever since it happened.
Yep.
If you haven't seen it, look it up.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Look up Derrick Henry, Josh Norman. It'll be the first thing on that comes up on Google. So
it's cool.
All right. Well, we'll get to another bagel, which unfortunately was bad for the crowd, but was great for me. The Raiders were in Kansas City. The Chiefs were 11.5-point home favorites. Total was 54.5. The Raiders won outright 40-32. I think biggest underdog win of the season so far, which is a nice feeling. And obviously they covered the spread, and the game went well over the 54.5. Our crowd had a lower scoring affair. Oh, sorry. I mean, it's still pretty high scoring, but they expected the Raiders to not score nearly as much. Interestingly, they nailed the Chiefs' score exactly. They predicted a 32-20 victory for the Chiefs, which meant that the Chiefs won and just barely covered that spread in the game. Stayed under the 54.5 just by a little bit. So this being my team, I'm going to talk a little bit about it. But I won't go too much into it. I will just say that the most important thing about this, the Raiders have put together good first halves in every game, meaning that they have been competitive in every game so far at the end of the first half. In the last 2 weeks against the Patriots and against the Bills, the second half, they just completely fell apart. And in against the Chiefs, they played probably one of their best defensive halves, if not the best defensive quarters of the season. It was 24-24 at halftime, and they gave up one touchdown in the second half, and no points were scored at all in the third quarter at all. And so the Raiders had a couple of really long drives. They also turned Patrick Mahomes over once and got the ball all the way down to like the 2-yard line. And so it was just a perfect second half. Derek Carr did throw his first interception of the season, but it was something that happened early on and the Raiders were able to overcome it. So, you know, really, I think what kind of it showed is that if the Raiders are going to make a mistake, do it early. And they do seem to show a lot of resilience in the first half, but if they make those mistakes in the second half, they just don't do it. And they did not do that. The one thing I will say, though, I did want to mention is, well, there are many things, but I'll try to avoid going too much into it. Derek Carr threw the ball deep. That was, I think, really opened up the offense in general, getting on the Russell Wilson playbook. Having that deep threat really allows for the tight ends and some of the slot receivers to play a role. But the one thing I did want to say was, you know, most of the time earlier in the season, there have been some weird calls and bad luck. And in this game, one of the luckiest plays that happened was Max Crosby. It was 3rd and 7, something like that. And the Chiefs had the ball. Max Crosby made this incredible individual play. He's being pushed behind Patrick Mahomes by the tackle. And when, I don't know how he senses this, but Patrick Mahomes rolls out to his right, the side that Max Crosby was coming from. And Max Crosby immediately spins backwards and is now 2 feet away from him, from Patrick Mahomes, and sacks him, almost strips him. And tackles him for the sack, but their inside linebacker, I think, or he might be the nose tackle. His last name's Key. I can't remember his first name, but in any case, for the Raiders, he comes flying in and nearly just takes Patrick Mahomes' head off. It should have been. If he makes contact, it absolutely would have been a roughing the passer call and absolutely deserved it. He whiffed entirely, and that is the only reason why the Chiefs' drive stopped. Wow. Was because this guy just absolutely missed taking Patrick Mahomes' head off, which he clearly intended to do.
Oh, wow.
So they got lucky in that the guy was just inept at doing his job. Now, Brian Baldinger, an analyst for NFL Network, talked about this particular player and how he spied Patrick Mahomes, and that really actually had a positive effect overall. But in this play in particular, I was like, oh my God, dude, don't ever do that again. Like,
don't ruin it.
Just wrap him up and hold him there. You know what I mean? Yeah, just totally. Anyway, be smart about it. So it was a great win, obviously. And then there's the one thing I'll share with you, Paul, is that my buddy Winston texts me with 6 minutes to go. The Raiders had just scored their second touchdown of the half to go up 40-24. And he texts me, "Hey, great win by the Raiders." This is 6 minutes left in the game.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what are you doing, dude? I mean, and then, you know, Patrick Mahomes goes down. They score a touchdown. They get, you know, hit the 2-point conversion. And I'm just like, dude, what have you done? And he's like, he texts me back. He says, gulp. Now, the last thing is that Josh Jacobs, did not have a very impressive stat line if you just look at the raw numbers, but he put every ounce of energy he had into every yard. And on that last drive, when they got the ball with about 4 minutes left, they got 2 first downs, I think, and he absolutely owned that drive and got them basically past a 2-minute warning, ran all the time off the clock, and that was how they ended up winning. So Josh Jacobs has been the closer that they need, and it really, really paid off. So anyway, I think that's 10 minutes of Raider talk, and we're good there.
Yeah, well, congratulations on a big win. It was a great start to a football Sunday and basketball Sunday for you.
Yeah, and it's too bad, too, because the crowd probably could have gotten the spread, the cover, but I think a late line move ultimately went down. It started out at 13.5 and it dropped under 11.5 or down to 11.5. So the crowd just missed on that. So it was an unfortunate result for the crowd, but I'm happy about it.
Yeah. Well, two notes from my perspective. The first is, and we already talked about this, I almost also texted you.
Yeah.
But then I realized there was like 6 minutes left.
Yeah.
After the Raiders scored to go up 40-24. Mm-hmm. And I thought the better of it. I already mistakenly made a barrel wager involving the Raiders last year, so I didn't. That was the last thing I wanted to do.
Yes,
so
that was wise. That was wise.
I firmly checked myself. So
I might have set your microphone on fire.
Yeah.
He texted me in the Raiders. Like,
smeared poop on it or something.
That would have been much more devious.
I don't know why I just gave you that idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Made me drink some peanut butter whiskey, right. I guess. But then the other thing is, I definitely thought about wanting to make that my barrel wager too, because I saw that double-digit point spread, and that I didn't have a feeling at all that necessarily that the Raiders would win as that big of underdogs, especially not playing in Kansas City. But it definitely occurred to me that that line felt a little bit big for this year.
Yeah,
so,
that's interesting.
For whatever that's worth.
Yeah.
I can say that now, but I never told anyone.
Right.
So that thought did cross my mind. I'm being honest. All right. Let's move on to the next game, which was also a good result for me, from my perspective, because it involves one of the rivals of my favorite team, the 49ers, getting absolutely destroyed by the Miami Dolphins in Santa Clara. So this game had the Dolphins as 8-point underdogs on the road. The total was 50.5, and the Dolphins won, as I said, in a blowout, 43-17, meaning the Dolphins obviously cover easily as underdog winners, and the total goes almost 10 points over the over-under at 60. So the crowd thought that the 49ers would win this game easily by roughly 9 points, so that the 49ers would win and cover the spread, and the total would go under 50.5 by about 5 points. So the crowd was way off, just as was just about everybody else, all the experts out there.
Yep.
Now, the 49ers have a ton of injuries. They had a ton of injuries both on offense and on defense. They got some key players back on offense, including their starting quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo. He played terrible and got benched to start the second half. He has a high ankle sprain on his right leg. So from what I heard, you know, it still must be bothering him badly enough to the point where he's not able to really put enough pressure on it to throw the ball down the field well at all. So he was kind of throwing some ducks up in the air, and I think he had 2 interceptions, and was not throwing a lot of completions. They weren't able to move the ball. And then just on defense, they still have just flat out too many injuries, particularly in their secondary. Richard Sherman is still out. Their other starting cornerback is out. I think they have some safety issues as well. So not a huge surprise that a team like the Dolphins, that's sort of playing with house money and looking like they're playing really well as a team, and just having a ton of fun in the process.
Yeah.
Not super surprising that they could take advantage of that vulnerable position that the 49ers are in, but it's a bad loss by the 49ers. I mean, it's to an AFC team, so it's not the end of the world, but it drops them to 2-3. They've already got a division loss against the Cardinals and another NFC conference loss against the Eagles. So, it's still early in the season, but they're in pretty bad shape so far.
Yep.
Definitely not playing with house money.
No, that's right. Yeah. I mean, better to be, you don't want to be running from behind this early in the season. So,
yeah, for sure. I mean, I do think I'm pretty confident the 49ers will turn things around, particularly once they start getting some of their key players back, which sounds like it's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. So,
yeah,
remains to be seen. I would definitely not count them out yet.
Yeah.
But it's always fun to see them lose.
Right. I know that feeling.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to the last bagel of the week. Thankfully, golly, man, we've been on this session for a long time.
God, we're still on the bagels.
The Colts were in Cleveland. The Browns were ultimately 1-point home favorites. Interestingly, they started out as underdogs, and then it moved all the way over to the Browns -1. But in any case, the total was 49.5. The Browns won relatively easily, 32-23, which meant that they won and covered the spread, and the game went over that 49.5. Our crowd had the Colts winning in a narrow victory, 24-22, which meant that the Colts would win and cover the spread, and the game would stay under the 49.5. This game was pretty ugly for the Colts. Phillip Rivers, I am worried for him. Baker Mayfield did not play particularly well either, though. So even though the Browns have scored 30 points in 4 straight games, this is the first 4-game winning streak in like 25 years. I'm not sure that the Browns are, you know, one of the top teams in the league. So we'll go into some of the authentic records here a little bit further down. But anyway, it was an ugly game, I think, overall. And the Browns kept trying to give it away. Ultimately, the Colts were not able to take advantage. So,
yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, let's flip the coin and move on to the positive side mm-hmm. of things and talk about the trifectas. So these are the games where the crowd, instead of getting everything wrong, got all three predictions right. Starting with the Cardinals and Jets game, the Cardinals were 7-point road favorites playing in New York. The total was 47.5, and the Cardinals won easily 30-10, which meant that they covered the spread and the total went under 47.5. The crowd predicted the Cardinals to win by a little bit better than 10 points, 29, let's call it, to 17. So the crowd thought the Cardinals would win and cover and that the total would go under. So all three right there.
Yeah, I mean, the Jets were good for what was ailing the Cardinals, that's for sure. So, yeah, you know, but on the other hand, like, don't take too much, fans, don't take too much away from this Cardinals victory, I would say. All right, well, let's move on to the next trifecta of the week. This was Paul's barrel wager. So we talked a little bit about this, but the Panthers were in Atlanta. Falcons were 2.5-point home favorites. The total is 54. The Panthers won outright 23-16, which meant they won and covered the spread, and the game stayed under the 54. Our crowd had the Panthers winning 26-24, roughly, but them being the underdogs, that meant that the Panthers win. It meant that they covered and the game stayed under the 54, so the crowd got all three right on that one.
Nice job, crowd. And then the Rams were in D.C. facing off against the Washington football team, who were 7-point home underdogs. The total was 46, and just the same as the Cardinals-Jets game, the Rams won this one 30-10, which meant that they win the game outright, cover the spread easily, and the total goes under 46. Crowd thought the Rams would win about 27-18, let's call it. So crowd thought the Rams would win, cover, and the total would go under.
Yeah, it was a pretty ugly game. Just a note, Alex Smith made a triumphant return from a really horrific leg injury, broken leg, almost died. And he came back to play. It's really an amazing
almost
story.
Almost lost his leg multiple times, right, too, plus in the recovery process. Yeah.
And I think on his second or third snap, Aaron Donald got around his got to him and, like, jumped on his back.
Yeah.
And Alex Smith carried him for, like, a step or two before falling over.
Yes, yeah.
So everybody held their collective breath, but he did okay. So
I know. Even when I didn't see that play live, and I saw it on the replay, and even though I knew that he hadn't been injured in the game, I saw that and I was like, oh my God, that's horrible. Because I think when he broke his leg originally, it was, what, 2 seasons ago, the 2018 season? Mm-hmm. It was J.J. Watt that tackled him.
Oh, really?
And really, it wasn't like, it was gross when it happened, but it looked like it was more that his leg kind of got twisted around on the turf than anyone like hitting him low or, you know, someone falling on him or something like that. So to see Aaron Donald essentially, you know, just blast through the line and jump on the guy's back.
Yeah.
It was pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. Aaron Donald did say after the, game, he said that mother bleeping leg is strong.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I'm sure there's plenty of titanium stuff in there now. It's bionic at this point.
Yeah. But Alex Smith, by all accounts, is one of the nicer guys, genuinely good guys. So it's great to see that. I think everybody felt happy for him. So that's cool.
For sure. Big congratulations to him.
Yep.
All right. Yeah. Round it out.
All right.
Trifectas.
All right. So last game was the Monday night game. The last trifecta was the Monday night game. The Chargers were in New Orleans. The Saints were 7-point home favorites. The total was 50. The Saints won in overtime 30-27, which meant that they won, but the Chargers covered the spread and the game went over the 50. Our crowd had a thread the needle victory for the Saints, thread the needle, meaning that they picked the favorite, but the underdog to cover, 29-24, which meant that they picked the Saints to win and the Chargers to cover and the game to go just over the 50. So nice job by the crowd. Pretty exciting game. Justin Herbert for the Chargers, quarterback for the Chargers, looks like the real deal. He looks, you know, sharp. Good pick for them. I wasn't sure that an Oregon product would survive, would do well, but he really seems to be doing, doing well.
He's played, what, 2.5 weeks now? Mm-hmm. He came in partway through a game.
No, he started. He started. So, yeah, 3 full games. He started for the Chiefs, against the Chiefs, yeah.
Yeah, and he's looked pretty solid in all three of those games.
For sure.
throwing the ball down the field, escaping pressure, running outside the pocket, doing a little bit of everything. So good for him. It makes watching the Chargers a little bit more exciting.
Right. They still can't get the Chargers stink off of them, but maybe it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, well, it took the Saints overtime to beat them. So, you know, maybe some things looking up for the L.A. Chargers now.
Right.
All right, our weekly crowd summary. So some kind of up and down results for the crowd overall this week. Crowd was 9-5 straight up. Oh, sorry. The crowd had a total prediction score of 43 points. Just a quick reminder of the prediction score of the crowd, just like every individual who makes score predictions throughout the week, gets 2 points for accurately predicting the winner of each game, 2 points for calling the spread correctly, and 2 points for getting the over-under. So the crowd had a total of 43 points, which is kind of sort of average.
Yeah. For 14 games, it's not too bad, but...
Yeah. Yeah, up to this point, I think all... The first 4 weeks of the season, there were 16 games in each week, right? Mm-hmm. But now we're down to 14 for this week. So the crowd was 9-5 predicting the straight-up winners, which is great. That brings the crowd's record overall straight up 45-18. That's a 70% winning percentage. It actually drops the crowd down by 1 percentage point. Is that right, Chris, from the previous week?
Yeah, but you know what? I'm sorry. I think this number's not updated.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but it does drop it down to 1 percentage point. That part is correct. But you keep going, Paul. I'll make sure that I've got the numbers correct.
Okay. Well, against the spread, this is where the crowd struggled. Again, not a surprise with 5 bagels in the mix. The crowd was only 5-9 against the spread this week, and against the total, the crowd was 7-7. So overall, record wise, against the spread, that brings the crowd to an even 37-37-3 pushes for obviously a 50% winning percentage overall on the season. And the over-under record moves to 39-33-5 pushes. Wow, it's 5 pushes already in the first 5 weeks of the season. That's crazy.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Really, those 5 pushes came in the first 4 weeks of the season.
Yep.
Which is kind of nuts. So that brings the crowd's overall winning percentage against the total to 54%. This week we had 9 total predictors.
Yeah, it's we're the loyal 9 listeners, so our predictors, I should say. So thanks everybody that continues to predict. Tell your friends, you know, $50 that you could win. Easy money.
That's right.
You know, you can beat, all you have to do is beat me and I suck. So, you know.
So, Chris, why don't you share some more details about the crowd records and how that breaks down?
All right. So, if you feel like keeping track of where the crowd is making their predictions and whether you want to follow them or do the opposite, here's where you can use this information in the future. So, this week, the crowd predicted the favorites to win outright in 12 games, going 8-4, and predicted the underdogs to win in 2 games, going 1-1. So the crowd was has so far 49-20 predicting favorites to win, and 5-3 predicting the underdogs to win outright, which is kind of, I still like that they're above 500 picking the underdogs. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, not easy to do.
No, I mean, they don't do it often, but when they do it, so far it's working out. Meanwhile, this week predicting the favorites to cover the spread, they went 2-5. So a lot of underdogs did the work this week. That brings the overall crowd record to 16-17-3, predicting the thread, the needle, meaning the favorite wins, but the underdog covers. The crowd went 2-3, bringing their record to 16-17 overall there. And then predicting the underdog, as I mentioned before, 1-1 this week for the 5-3 record. Finally, in the over-under category, kind of interesting, the crowd predicted only 3 games for the games to go over, which is kind of interesting because every game seemed to be going over, though the unders, well, actually it was a split this week. So, but only 3 games going 1-2, bringing the overall record for the crowd to 22-13 and with 3 pushes. And then picking the under, the crowd went 6-5, so a little bit over 500 for a record now of 17-20-2. So, as I said, half went over, half went under, which is kind of what you're expecting. So I'm guessing that the Vegas lines or totals are starting to
adjust
a little bit more. So yeah, they're probably, whatever advantage there might have been earlier in the season.
Yeah, picking the over the first 4 weeks of the season was very profitable.
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully the crowd will continue to adjust in that area. That's been one area where the crowd has actually performed consistently well, is predicting the over-under. So, all right, I'll cover the MyBookieAG.ag Super Contest. So last week the crowd went 1 point, went 1-3-1, one win, three losses and a push. And this week the crowd really recovered nicely. I'm calling this the opposite of week two. Week two, the crowd had only three incorrect predictions against the spread. I somehow picked two of the three in the Super Contest. I could have picked pretty much any other games, and we would have gone 5-0, but nevertheless, went 3-2 that week. This week, the crowd only picked five correct against the spread, but we picked four in the Super Contest. So a really nice recovery gets us closer to, obviously closer to the money. We're now in like a 1,000th place. But anyway, they picked the Panthers +2.5 at the Falcons, picked the Rams -7.5 at Washington, the Texans -5.5 versus the Jaguars, and the Browns +1.5. So we talked about it earlier, but when we made the pick, it was +1.5 versus the Colts. So the crowd prediction at the time was still +1.5. In any case, those were the four wins. The crowd did miss on the Bengals +11.5 at the Ravens. So that was unfortunate. It was such a big spread. I thought that one could have worked out, but anyway.
Me too.
Yeah.
So did the crowd.
Yeah. So, but our record overall now is at 500. So, hey, better to be at 500 than trying to work your way to 500. So,
yeah,
just need,
I think that's better than where we were at this time last year.
Yeah, so. I think so. I think we were a little bit behind. So, it's we just finished week five. So, what, 11 more weeks, 12 more weeks of the season. So, let's just do, 12 more 4-1 records and we'll be fine.
Yeah.
We should probably win if we did that. Should be in the money. So, anyway, that's a mybookie.ag Super Contest.
All right. Well, it's time for the meat of the show. Let's step on up to the hot take counter to see what juicy tidbits are cooking this week. We started last week after passing the quarter pole of the season, assessing the authentic records in each conference, meaning we take a look at each of the top contenders and debate whether or not they're actually a good team based on their opponents' records and any really quality victories they've accumulated so far. After just four games, the data doesn't really reveal a whole lot as to who the contenders are for the most part, the haves, while their opponents have been the have-nots so far with so few games played. This has certainly been true of the season so far, but week five did yield some interesting results with a couple really quality victories, most notably by Chris's Raiders beating the Chiefs in Kansas City, the Browns topping the Colts and the Titans just tonight with a big win over the Bills following Tennessee's COVID outbreak dilemma. We'll start the NFC, though, with my Seahawks, who scored a thrilling victory on Sunday night over the Vikings on a last-second touchdown to cap off a 94-yard drive with under 2 minutes to go. This is an example of what I would consider a quality win over a team in the Vikings that is actually probably quite a bit better than their record reveals. Their loss to the Seahawks drops them to a miserable 1-4 on the season, while the Seahawks move to 5-0 for the first time in franchise history, as we mentioned earlier. The Vikings, however, and Lions, unsurprisingly, have played the hardest schedule in the NFC and the third toughest in the entire NFL after 5 weeks, according to opponent records. And I got to say, Chris, the Vikings looked like the better team in that game against the Seahawks for much of the time, just not when it mattered most. I say all this to further illustrate that the concept of authentic records is always fully up for debate, even when it appears to be black and white. Thus, the hot take counter. So let's go through and look at these authentic records. We started this, as I said, in week four last week. And so for the NFC, what we're going to do, we're going to pick kind of who the top contenders in each conference are so far to this point in the season, and look at who they've played, their opponent's win percentage, and kind of break it down from there. So as I mentioned, the Seahawks are 5-0, so they've beaten the Falcons, Patriots, Cowboys, Dolphins, and now the Vikings. Those opponents have a cumulative record of just 5-15, so that's a 38% opponent winning percentage. Not very good. But when you consider the fact that those teams now have played a lot of winning teams, it's not surprising that they're kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum to this point. As I mentioned, so we're only 5 weeks into the season. The Seahawks do have a plus 34 net points, which is pretty good. It's probably in the top half, I would say, net point differential so far to this point in the season. But even that metric isn't really yielding much decisive information at this point.
Yeah, yeah. This early on, they haven't lost any, but
right.
So that I guess would, but if one loss by 10 points and now you're down, it's early enough that if they do end up losing a game, that could really drop down. So the net points really come into play when you're talking about, like, 10 week 10 or and so on.
Right. Right. Definitely. The next team on the list is the Packers, who were on a bye this week. Just a reminder, so far they're 4-0. They've beaten the Vikings, Lions, Saints, and Falcons. Their opponent's win percentage is 33%. At least it was at that point. I don't know if that's been updated yet. After week 5, no,
that's correct.
But they're on a bye anyway, so it's kind of pointless to talk about that. They're sitting on a plus 51 net point differential after just 4 games, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I think that's tops in the NFL, actually, or it was after week 4. And then the Saints have wins against the Bucks, Lions, and Chargers. That opponent winning percentage, they actually have, I think the Saints, at least in the NFC, if not the entire NFL, are the only winning team with a opponent winning percentage that high of 57%. Mm. So the teams they've played so far, according to this measure, they've played the toughest schedule out of any team with a winning record so far. They have lost to the Packers. That's it.
Right.
Then the Bears, they're sitting at a, I think we could all agree, a somewhat surprising 4-1 at this point. They've beaten the Lions, Giants, Falcons, and Bucks. Their opponent's winning percentage is a paltry 32%, so not that great.
Nope.
They also only have a plus 6 net point differential. So this is where we start to, we can use this to paint a picture. I know we were just saying, with respect to the Seahawks, their point differential doesn't really mean a whole lot at this point. But when the point differential is that low and a team has 4 out of 5 victories against opponents with that low of a winning percentage, you have to start to wonder, is maybe the ball's kind of bounced the Bears' direction a couple more times than not so far this season, or there have been key injuries on the other team or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever the case might be, they've won 4 out of 5 games by a close margin and not really like blown anyone out. So the jury is still out on the Bears. That's our hot take anyway. I think we can both agree on that.
Yep.
And then the Rams, they've had a solid season so far from, looking at it from the outside in. They've got wins against the Cowboys, Eagles, Giants, and the Washington football team. With their one loss coming to the Bills on the road. So they have already, to this point in the season, swept the entire NFC East.
Right.
They are the NFC East champion, I guess. Their opponent win percentage is also only 38%. So not good. But they do have a plus 46 net point differential. So, just the eye test tells me that the Rams are a pretty legit team.
Yeah, yeah. And it's important to recognize, I think, just real quick, when I look at these, the Bills are, for the Rams anyway, make up a substantial amount of the points, of the opponent win percentage, because the Bills are, 80% have a 800 winning percentage right now.
Right.
And so, you take them out, and the teams that the Rams, for example, have won against, I think that drops their winning percentage way down, probably to closer to 20%.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's true, because Washington only has one win. The Eagles have 2 wins. Giants are winless. Cowboys have what? 2 wins?
Cowboys have 2. Eagles have 1 and a tie. Giants have 0 and
right.
Washington has 1. So yeah, they're all under 500 for sure and close, So yeah, it's 4 wins between all 4 teams.
So. Yeah. So the Rams have, for the most part, just taken care of business.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, but I think to your point, Paul, like if you look at the, And compare that to the Bears. The Bears have their opponents have a worse winning percentage, and their net points are plus six. So just a much bigger hill decline for the Bears. I would be much more skeptical of them. The Rams, at least when they win, they seem to win relatively comfortably against these bad teams. So,
yeah. So that rounds out the NFC. Those are the teams that have a 4-1 record or better. There are three other teams sitting on a 3-2 record. We'll skip those for now until. Yeah. More things develop later on the season.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Paul. So I'll cover the AFC because that's where my Raiders sit. So we'll start with the Bills, who just lost their first game of the season to the Titans. But they have wins against the Jets, the Giants, the Rams, and the Raiders. Their opponent win percentage, interestingly, was 65%. So because both the Rams and the Raiders are above 500, and they did lose to the Titans, who were undefeated up to this point. So they do have their other wins against the Jets and the Giants. But they have a solid, but on the other hand, they lost pretty big against the Titans. So their net points dropped way down. And now they're actually minus three net points overall. So just kind of an interesting, this is why one game can really knock, throw that net points out of whack. Meanwhile, next game, the next team that's in, I think the number two spot, well, actually I'm not sure where they sit these days, but, given the tiebreakers and all that, but are the Chiefs. They have wins against the Texans, Chargers, Ravens, and Patriots for an opponent win percentage of 53%. They lost to the Raiders. They have plus 39 net points. I don't think that, despite the loss of the Raiders, I don't think this changes their position too much. They didn't lose by much, and, otherwise they've had pretty comfortable wins otherwise. So, moving on, the Steelers are undefeated. They've beaten the Giants, Broncos, Texans, and Eagles, but that winning percentage is dismal, 24%. Yikes. Mm. They do have a plus 31 net points, which is not as much as you'd expect from playing teams that bad. So just kind of interesting, that might be a team where you still kind of keep your eye on them. You're not quite sure that you're sold on just yet.
Not quite sold.
Yeah. Continuing on, the Titans, they are still undefeated. They've beaten the Broncos, Jaguars, Vikings, and Bills. The opponent winning percentage there is 46%, though interestingly, I think most of that comes from the Bills, who were, as we mentioned, are now 4-1. They do have a plus 32 in net points, so they're still, I think, certainly on the positive side of the ledger. Continuing on, the Browns, it's going to take me a little while to get used to that. They've beaten up on bad teams. They've beaten the Bengals, Cowboys, Washington, and the Colts in four straight weeks. And that opponent win percentage is 53%, but that's because they also played the Ravens, who are 4-1. So, having one good team on the schedule can really help out your opponent win percentage. So I think maybe what we have to do is we have to look at the teams that they've beaten and that win percentage and then segment that out. We're getting all this information from a cool site called playoffstatus.com. And they roll all of the opponents together, which I think is valuable unto itself. I think if you play a lot of teams that, and that your overall opponents have a high win percentage, that will improve your play overall. You play against good teams, you tend to get better if you're able to accommodate. But regardless, if you just beat up on bad teams, then when you get to the playoffs, you're likely to get knocked out earlier, I would guess.
Yeah, or so. At least it could be somewhat of some good insight into it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, we'll cover the last two. So we mentioned the Ravens just now against the Browns. Well, they're our next team. So the Ravens have wins against the Browns, Washington, the Texans, and the Bengals. But they have a loss to the Chiefs, so their opponent win percentage is 53%. But again, that most of that is coming from a single team in the Chiefs, and they were not particularly competitive against them. So just kind of interesting. They have a plus 49 net points. So they do beat up against bad teams, it seems like, but they did lose pretty handily against I guess it just kind of goes to show, because I think they lost that Chiefs game by, 14, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And and they're still plus 49, so that's kind of impressive. I did want to mention that the Browns are minus two. They got their butts pretty well handed to them against the Ravens. That's probably why they're minus two right now.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
And then finally, we will mention the Colts. The Colts and Raiders are tied, but, you know, I didn't want to be too much of a homer. So the Colts are 3-2, and they're in that last playoff spot in the AFC. They have wins against the Vikings, the Bears, and the Jets. And they have losses against the Jaguars and the Browns. Their opponent win percentage is 40%, and they are at plus 47 net points. So they do have some pretty big wins against their bad teams. You know, they do off two losses now, so it's going to be interesting to see. And their two losses are against, well, one bad team and one good team. So
speaking of playoffstatus.com, it's a cool site. It's very, very basic looking, but there's a lot of really interesting information on here. Chris, this information might find you well. So in the AFC, the Raiders to this point have played the second hardest schedule so far. According to the record of the opponents of games that they've completed so far through 5 weeks, but they have the second easiest winning percentage schedule of remaining opponents based on their winning percentage. So opponents of remaining games have a 39% winning percentage according to this, which is good for, as I said, second easiest in the AFC and second easiest overall in the NFL.
I like that.
Next to the Chiefs. They have the easiest remaining schedule in the entire league, according to this. Opponents have played games. Raiders, 72% winning percentage based on teams they've played so far.
Well, okay. I mean, you know, that's something.
Second hardest in the conference, fourth hardest in the league overall.
Okay.
The Seahawks, I think, are in a similar situation. Let me just get back over to here. Seahawks actually play one of the easiest schedules in the entire NFL across this entire season, which I'm okay with. So opponents of all games so far, the Seahawks have their opponents have a 43% winning percentage overall. Only 38% in games that they've played so far. Their remaining schedule is a little bit harder, 45% winning percentage, which is, let's see. Still, they're only 25th hardest schedule, so seventh easiest schedule in the entire NFL. For the rest of the way.
All right,
not bad.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that'll get you to, you know, get to the postseason, then anything can happen.
Yeah, and that's factoring in that's taking into account that the NFC West is noted to be probably one of the toughest divisions
League,
so.
Yeah, and you haven't played anybody in the NFC West yet, so.
That's right. That's probably why. Their opponents of remaining games have a notably higher winning percentage than the games they've played so far.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on really quickly to our – we've been remiss in not including this so far, our expert analysis. Our friend Robert Sturgill has been compiling the predictions for various experts across, across the media landscape and has been compiling basically their results. He's been generating his own crowd wisdom there. And so for week five, it turns out that our best bets, which you can subscribe to going to steakhousesports.com and clicking on the newsletter sign up, had the best predictions for this week. We just picked the five games, as we mentioned. Otherwise, Cynthia Freeland ended up with a 20% return on investment overall. So pretty good result for her there. We'll actually post all these to our site, our blog, blog.crowdsourcescores.com. But in any case, we had 23 total predictors, but only about, what does it look like? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, a little less than half actually ended up with a profitable return on investment in week five. So, you know, the fact that our crowd didn't do so well is kind of in line with a lot of the experts. So our whole principle here is that the crowd wisdom will do any better than any individual predictor. Now our crowd wisdom is dependent on a bigger crowd. So, you know, kind of take it with a grain of salt. But the fact that the experts are not doing better than our crowd is to me a little reminder that, you know, everybody's kind of guessing, and I like our crowd's chances.
But it does also go to show that when you use the crowd aggregated prediction and provide your own sort of analysis on top of that, you can leverage that to your advantage. These results show that very obviously. So
yeah,
Robert Sturgill took our best bets, which is the crowd wisdom select here. And that's, as you mentioned, over 36% return on investment for this week. It doesn't happen every week, but you know, at least you can use the crowd wisdom, like I said, kind of to your advantage. You can,
yeah,
you can analyze it any which way you want to for your own purposes. You can look at things like what the crowd's record is when picking the favorite or the thread the needle or, you know, the over versus the under, and start to, you know, see some trends that maybe align with some of your own thoughts. So you can be your own expert, but use the crowd wisdom to help inform that.
Right.
All right. Well, let's jump into the remainder of the games. We've covered already nine games off the schedule.
Yeah.
In the earlier bagels and trifecta section. So we only have a few games remaining to cover here, starting with the Jacksonville Jaguars, who were in Houston facing off against the Texans. The Texans were 5.5-point home favorites, and the total was 54.5. The Texans won 30-14, which meant that they won outright, covered the spread, and the total went under 54.5. Our crowd also thought that the Texans would win roughly by a little less than 3 points, about, we'll call it 24-21. So the crowd, again, thought the Texans would win, but the Jags would cover in the thread the needle, and the total would go under 54.5. The crowd gets the Texans win and the under, but misses out on one of those dreaded thread the needle predictions gone wrong.
Yep. The Texans did respond to their coach getting fired, so we'll see if they keep that up, but generally the honeymoon wears off after a week or two, so maybe don't buy the Texans to keep that trend going.
That's right.
All right, we'll cover really quickly my barrel wager. The Eagles were in Pittsburgh. The Steelers were 7-point home favorites by kickoff. The total was 44. The Steelers won 38-29 in a pretty wild game, but they did win and cover the spread, and the game went over the 44. Our crowd had the Steelers winning 25-19, which meant that they would win, but the Eagles would cover and thread the needle, and the game ultimately landed on a push. No, that's not right. I'm sorry, it landed exactly on the total, unfortunately. So the crowd actually missed out on that. I forgot to goose the numbers one way or the other. So the crowd actually was predicted an actual push, which is really unfortunate. So in any case, the crowd got the Steelers win correct, but missed out on the Eagles cover and the over. So,
all right. The Bengals were in Baltimore against the Ravens, who were 11.5-point favorites. Total was 50.5, and the Ravens won easily 27-3, which meant they win, cover the spread, and the total goes well under 50.5. The crowd predicted the Ravens to win and the Bengals to cover, unfortunately, and the total to go just under 50.5. The crowd gets the Ravens win and the under by a mere 0.07 of a point, basically. But unfortunately, the crowd misses out on another thread the needle prediction on the Bengals. But mind you, with a much larger eye hole.
Right.
So this wasn't, it's a thread the needle by definition. But the crowd had a lot of wiggle room there. And unfortunately, the Bengals didn't come to play.
Yeah. The Ravens defense really feasted on Joe Burrow. So that guy survives the season. He's going to have a long career, but God, I hope he doesn't get killed. All right. We'll move to possibly the most talked about game of the week. The Giants were in Dallas. The Cowboys were 7.5-point home favorites. The total is 52. The Cowboys did win in a squeaker 37-34, which meant that they won, but the Giants covered the spread and the game went over the 52. Our crowd had a thread the needle victory for the Cowboys as well, 28-21. meaning that the Cowboys would win and the Giants would cover, but the crowd predicted the game to go under the 52. So the crowd got the Cowboys win and the Giants cover correct in a thread the needle, but missed on the under. This game was talked about quite a lot because of a pretty gruesome injury to Dak Prescott, who had a compound factor in his fracture in his ankle. Unfortunately, it was really tragic to watch. And Andy Dalton did come in and actually led the team to a victory. So kind of it was obviously a sad, sad sight for Dak Prescott, who was having a fantastic, fantastic year. I mean, I think he was probably on pace for 6,000 yards and was playing. He had, the three highest passing totals of the first 5 weeks of the season.
Yeah, so I think he's thrown for over 400 passing yards in all of his games so far this year.
Yeah, so just he was having, and it was a contract year. It was just a really miserable circumstances. And obviously, thankfully, barring any complications, he'll be back in 6 months. So obviously he's out for the year, but that is not as bad a recovery as something else,
Right.
We all hope that he comes back and is able to play at the level that he was playing at.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right. Rounding it out with the Vikings at my Seahawks, who were 6.5-point home favorites. Total was 54.5, and the Seahawks, as we mentioned, won in a thrilling 1-point game, 27-26, when it was all said and done. So the Seahawks win, but the Vikings do cover as underdogs. So this is a true thread the needle.
Mm-hmm.
And the total goes just under the 54.5. The crowd also thought the Seahawks would win, but by a much larger margin, picked the Seahawks to cover the spread by almost nine points. And the total, the crowd also predicted that to go just under the 54.5. So the crowd gets the Seahawks win and the under correct, but obviously misses out on that cover. Should have known better after last season. All those 1-point victories the Seahawks had. This was going to be a close one.
Yeah.
But yes, great, great win by my Seahawks. And the crowd gets 2 out of 3, so that's not so bad. All right.
Yeah, that's it. Nothing else you want to say? Okay.
No, I mean the game itself speaks for itself.
Yeah,
we've already spent enough time.
Okay, fair enough. I spent.
It was
five
awesome.
That was nice of you, Paul. Let everybody get out because I spent 12 minutes on it.
It was definitely a game that could have gone either way. Super happy that the Seahawks won. As I mentioned, going into the bye week 5-0 for the first time. So we'll leave it at that. There were lots of cool, crazy things that happened in that game. Also, some really poor play by the Seahawks and the Vikings in some cases too. So. Yeah. But it was a fun game to watch either way. So let's move on to the individual results, starting with our weekly winners. So prediction score-wise, Chris, you pulled out the victory, pulled away from the crowd with a solid 59 total prediction points this week. I think you were 9 points better than the next highest predictor.
Yep.
So straight up, you went 10-4 against the spread 8-6, over under 10-4, and you had 3 bullseyes. Well done. There were no perfect predictions this week. And in fact, there have been no 10 pointers, no exact perfect predictions on the season so far that we can speak of.
Yeah. Although interestingly, I think there have been like 3 or 4 scoregamis, which is that term that they use for, when a score has never been recorded before in the history of the league. So kind of interesting. I think that 38-29 Steelers victory might have been one, but anyway.
Really? Did feel like an odd score.
Yeah. 32-23 for the Colts, Browns Colts also. I felt a little bit, I don't think I'd seen that one before, but anyway.
Yeah.
All right, we'll move on to the stake stacks of the week. So just a reminder, by the way, if you're making predictions, you can predict stakes on each, the spread and the total, and up to, from 1-0 to 3 stakes. And we score you based on how many you net as well as your return on investment. So the biggest stake stack of the week goes to Brian Cole, our good friend. He netted 15 stakes off 81 wager, which was good for an 18.5% return on investment. Brian just continues to max bet every single game, which is kind of awesome. I love that. Meanwhile, the best return on investment goes to Paul. Paul comes out on top on the return on investment department, netting 12 stakes off only 30 wagers. So Paul, just much more prudent, really, you know, invests wisely.
Making the most of it.
Yep, for a 40% return, 40%. If you got 40% return on investment, you would take that bet any day of the week. Oh, so yeah. Paul, tell me where I'm gonna go into the code and I'm gonna see where you're betting, because I need to, you know, get that sweet, sweet return on investment.
You'll have to go into the matrix.
Yeah, exactly.
Of my brain.
All right, why don't you go over to the overall leaderboards, Paul?
All right, prediction score wise overall for the season, Brian Cole is on top with 297 total points. Chris, you're close behind Brian with 293, only 4 points behind. I'm in a distant third place with only 261 overall prediction points, and we need more predictors to light up our leaderboard.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, even though for prediction score, you know, it's unlikely, you know, to catch up at this point, although who the hell knows? Like, you know, you could just come in and tear it up.
Yeah.
You know, you never know. You never know. But over on the stake stack side, you can catch up quite easily because we're going off of net and return on investment. So if you're very wise, as Paul is, and you place your bets wisely, and, you know, you get, you know, you're getting your basically the you're wagering on the lines that you feel the most confident in, and they get turned and you get them right, you can make it all the way up the light leaderboard pretty quickly. So my wife Gemma is leading in the return on investment category with 24.4% return on investment. But remember, you know, you bet, you know, Paul beat that in 1 week. So if you come in, you wager 40 or 30 and get 12 net stakes, that's, you're already at the top of the leaderboard. So you can actually jump at the top of the leaderboard after just 1 week. Now, we do have some qualifications and stuff like that, but it's early. So just come on in and start predicting and wagering stakes, and you can be at the top of the leaderboard. Meanwhile, in the stake stack department, Brian Cole, not surprisingly, just continues to max bet, and he is at the top by a mile. He is at 51, but he wagered 328 stakes to get there. That is, God, that's amazing. Going to Vegas with Brian Cole would just be a trip.
Yeah, he's still, you know, 15.5% return on investment.
Yeah,
so
yeah, still again, a great return on investment. Absolutely,
15.5%. Yeah.
Yep.
Go to Vegas with a couple $1,000 and make a 15.5% return. That's not so bad.
That would be all right.
Yeah.
Cover a trip to Cirque du Soleil or something.
Yes, it would. All right. Well, let's wrap this thing up. Head on over to steakhousesports.com. Again, you can spell steak either way, like the meat or the bet, to download the app and start predicting. Remember, winning a week gets you a prestigious shout out on this here program, but also gives you the potential opportunity to win some Amazon gift cards.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a $25 Amazon gift card in the offering if you win the overall prediction score leaderboard in a week, or the return on investment stakes leaderboard in a given week. Odds do update daily, so please make sure to check your predictions before game time. And feel free to compete directly against myself and Chris by joining our SHS crowd on the app. You know what? Forget that. Just join.
Yeah, we'll
and
just cut
make
this.
Some predictions.
Yeah, just cut it.
You can also follow us on Twitter using handle at House of Stakes, and on Facebook at facebook.com/steakhousesports. Of course, you can always contact us via email using podcast@steakhousesports.com. Oh, and by the way, if you're playing along with us at home, please do give us an app, give the app a rating in the App Store. If you want to see improvements, leave a review and we'll do our best to take care of it. And while you're in the reviewing mood, please give us a rating or a review on iTunes, as it helps people discover the show.
All right. Well done, Paul. Thanks a lot. So even though the Hawks and Raiders are off next week, Paul and I will still be competing. We hope you'll compete with us. Remember, up to $50 still at stake every week just by predicting the scores of each game. We'll see if the Packers can keep pace with the Seahawks, or if the Seahawks will take over the number one seed by themselves without even playing a game. There are also a couple of really good matches between the halves this week, and we will get a little more clarity about who has a chance for a run in the postseason, and if the halves are really halves or if they're have-nots, just
right.
Pretending it to be halves. But in any case, whatever happens, Paul and I will be back next week to cover all the games and see if the crowd can reverse its gentle slide towards 500. So until then, I'm Chris.
And I'm Paul.
And we hope you enjoy your steaks. Thanks for listening.